Coming up on Boston Public Radio, President Obama retreated yesterday on health care reform. We're going to ask you, is this the beginning of a desperately needed fix or the beginning of the end of health care reform? Callie Crossey on NFL bullying and a casino on Martha's Vineyard. Continuing our series on aging, Garen Daly lists the very best movies on getting old, from the fun to the not fun at all. Emily Rooney on Bill Maher's slam on Boston Strong, and of course, a weekly list of observations. And then our news quiz. It's Doctor versus Doctor in a news quiz combat. That's coming up on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Jim Browdy has a day off. Filling in ably for him is Sue O'Connell, co-publisher of Bay Windows and South End News.
Hey, Marjorie.
Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. So yesterday was not a great day for President Obama. He tried to make good on one of his signature Obamacare assurances that you can keep your current health care plan if you want to. This, of course, is in response to these new guidelines, which would leave about 5% of Americans without coverage if they didn't change their plans. So Obama made big, bold apologies. He's saying people can now keep their policies. They're working to get the health exchange websites running. But has this debacle with health care taken on a momentum of its own? Will health care reform even survive this mess? Will he be able to take on anything else like immigration reform? Or is Obamacare going to obstruct and obscure the rest of his presidency? We're going to talk about that with you at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Are you depressed about this, Sue O'Connell?
It is such a disaster on such an important and good effort. And I am astounded at the stupidity of so many smart people. From the get-go, this has been an absolute disaster. I don't know how you can go out in front of people and say something like either he didn't know that that was the case, that you weren't going to be able to keep existing plans, or he thought people would be thrilled because the plans, many of the plans are much better than the plans that they have. You know, the lack of understanding of how the insurance companies work. You know, this, I'm not an expert in this, but I understand that by now taking the company's business plans by saying, okay, you can keep it, throws a wrench into their plans.
Well, they're all complaining. The insurers are all complaining. The state regulators are all complaining. Some state regulators say they're not going to do this because they're in Washington State and some other places, Rhode Island, the local equivalent of our connectors, which is not working so well here in Massachusetts. They're working well elsewhere. They're not going to do it. They're predicting havoc. Our number is 877-301-8970. Let's hear from Obama yesterday. He was talking about that, you know, Pitfalls are there with the Affordable Care Act, but from here on out, he says, things will only get better.
I am confident that by the time we look back on this next year, that people are going to say, this is working well, and it's helping a lot of people.
I'm not so confident.
Well, no, I am confident about that. I think that
I hope so.
No, I think that, you know, I still find it disingenuous and intellectually dishonest for the Republicans to keep being upset that it's not working when they couldn't be happier that it's not working.
They are thrilled. They are thrilled that it's not working.
So they can get upset that some person who has a really crummy plan that doesn't cover very much is now going to have to give up that very crummy plan to have something that in the long run will say, we're all going to get sick. In the long run will save that person money. But at the same time, if it gets any worse, I mean, Obama's right. If it gets any worse, he might as well just resign. I mean, the website was one thing. And that, I think, is also a problem of how we award government contracts. And what I get disappointed about is that in 2 years, we're not going to talk about how government contracts get awarded. We're just going to remember that the website was a mess.
New York Times, which is a fairly centrist to left paper, mm-hmm. is comparing in a story mm-hmm. today, comparing his performance with Obamacare to George Bush's performance
Absolutely.
With Hurricane Katrina and
Absolutely.
Saying, is this guy a total incompetent president? 877-301-8970. By the way, before we get to the calls, the Drudge Report, many people already know this, but it is sort of the conservative Bible, and it drives a lot of the news coverage in mm-hmm. in the whole country,
yep.
on radio and on television, particularly on Fox News, which has a lot of listenership. The headlines on the Drudge Report today, crisis of confidence, liberals are panicked. Remember Michelle Bachmann, who ran for
yes.
president? Well, Michelle Bachmann apparently is one of those Americans who's lost her insurance, and she made a big deal about this. They had some guy that was a former senior advisor to Obama on television last night, of course, on Fox, calling this the beginning of the death spiral. So you're right. The conservatives could not be happier about this.
But the other challenge here too, Marjorie, and this is one that, you know, we're part of, the media and the news, the talking heads and the pundits aren't fact-checking what's really happening. And that's what the real problem is. How many people are we really talking about who have lost their insurance? And of those people, how many people are losing plans that barely covered anything, that were rip-offs to them? What are the real numbers? What's the percentage of people that we're talking about?
Well, the line is 5%. But what you're hearing people say now, as we heard Michelle mm-hmm. Bachmann, whether yep. you believe her or not, say that she had a pretty good plan. Apparently, her husband has some pretty significant health problems. She had a particularly good plan, or a reasonably good plan, I should say, and she lost hers. So now there's some second guessing of it's only the terrible plans that are being shut off. Some people are
I'd like to see her plan. I want to see her plan, and I want to compare it to the plan she was going to get.
Okay. Well, why don't you
call her right up
and ask her. 877-301-8970. Is this just a disaster that cannot be fixed? Is it a disaster that can be fixed? Where are we going to be a year from now? Is this just going to be a blip? Well, it can't be a blip because it's too big to be a blip.
Yes, more than a blip.
But if we do get this website fixed, if Massachusetts gets its website fixed, if everything is okay in a year and people are signing up, and the bottom line, of course, is if you don't convince enough of those so-called young invincibles to sign up, and many of the young invincibles are the ones that have these very bad health care plans, then, of course, the financial underpinning of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act is no longer underpinning.
Right. The people who don't get sick who are paying for insurance are the ones that have to pay. It's a Ponzi scheme, just like the Social Security is.
That's right.
We need the young people to pay for the old people.
That is correct.
It's a Ponzi scheme.
Brian,
I'm all for it.
Brian from Weymouth, you are first this hour on the Is It a Death Spiral or Not a Death Spiral, Brian?
Well, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. And I kind of wanted to just add a little comment. I wouldn't compare it to Katrina because I think that might be a little bit insulting to Katrina. comfortable in that analogy. And in terms of Obamacare, I feel it's almost like a media farce. Like the underlying issue is still like very relevant. Insurance companies are the worst thing for the healthcare system. They do not do no good evil. Their bottom line is to make money the any way possible. So, like, this whole, like, oh, no, computer glitch, oh, no, when's it going to be ready? You know, we didn't have it a month ago. We've been dealing with crappy insurance that's ruining our healthcare system for the last decade. So, like, all this, like, media about, oh, no, what, you know, I don't care if Obamacare wants to call it A-Care. I don't care if it's going to take a year. No matter what, it is better than what we have. And if Michelle Bachmann is going to tell me about her insurance, she is not representing a large society. So I really don't care what she says. And honestly, I've heard her speak before, so I wouldn't quote anything she says.
That's why I want to see your plan. I don't think she understands how her plan works. That's why I want to see it. But, Brian, I agree with your point about Katrina, but the thing that does, you know, just really strikes me is how out of it Obama and the Obama administration seem to be around this problem. And to me, that's sort of the same look on his face that Bush had during Katrina when, you know, Anderson Cooper was screaming that people weren't getting the services that they need and the rescues that they need. And Obama seems tone deaf to the fact that whether or not it's justified, he still needs to address this issue.
Yeah, and also the other thing, Brian, thank you for the call, is that it's not better for people in Massachusetts here who have been going to the Massachusetts Health Connector for several years now, and it's worked reasonably well, and they go on there and they get their insurance. because of Obamacare, I asked the governor here this when he was here yesterday, it's like Obamacare has infected the website that used to work really well. We had a story in the Herald about how people had to claim that they were incarcerated, that they were in jail, or they were in a mental health facility in a hospital in order to complete their application, and that it wouldn't accept the applications of people with hyphenated names. I myself was on the website for 50 minutes, and I finally gave up just trying to get it to accept my password. So if you are someone who's dependent on the Massachusetts Health Connector, your insurance is running out at the end of December, there's 150,000 people who are getting a little bit nervous about their insurance. So it's not just a media creation here. 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Dan from Worcester. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jean.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. Listen, I don't think it's incompetence entirely. I think it's more arrogance.
What do you mean?
I think that the president is a very arrogant person. He does not want to admit any type of failure at all, and he'll go the whole nine yards. He'll drive the truck literally off the road with his ideology. What's happened now is he's finally realizing that this is hurting real people, that real people are losing their insurances.
But what insurance are they? You know, I agree with you, Dan, that I think – but first of all, I think in order to be president, you have to be arrogant. I think that's sort of like, you know –
I don't think he's necessarily more arrogant than the next guy.
No, but I think there is a part of it where you hope there's someone sitting in there in the Oval Office that is giving him hard truths and hard information. And obviously, I don't know whether there is or there isn't. But to the point, Dan, I mean, what are people really losing? Are they losing plans that they're spending, you know,
They're losing rip-off plans is what they're losing, for the most part.
The two reports that I heard from folks on news media was that one person lost a plan where they were paying $700 a month for their premium. They ended up with a plan that was $400 a month and covered more out-of-pocket expenses. I think most of these plans are crummy and are rip-offs. But we're not focusing on that. I mean, and I agree, we should be focusing on the fact that he didn't know, or he lied, that people were going to have to give up these crummy plans.
There are a lot of issues that swirl around this. Like me, I'm just a guy on the street, okay?
Right.
I'm a 60-year-old plumber, okay, with three grown-up children and a couple of grandchildren.
Are you single?
Are you looking for a date?
I am. I'm looking for a pension, and I'm looking for somebody with insurance.
Okay.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, there you go. So basically, I look out on this whole thing, having experienced life over the past 60 years, and I just look at the whole thing, and I look at it as it's a whole lot of people running around there in the government who either are arrogant or have no knowledge of what's going on, and there are good plans, there are bad plans. And I look at myself, and I say, you know what? I'm smart enough to choose what I want and need for myself, and will, you know, pay for it. Now, I know that that's a broad statement. Everybody can't pay for insurance and whatnot. And that's what probably started this whole thing, the 30 million people who couldn't afford it. I think if the president had was properly explained to that, hey, we can help the 30 million you want to turn it into this government thing. I wouldn't have been happy with that either, but it would have been a whole lot better than this.
Dan, with all due respect, and thank you for the call, you know that the chief, or certainly one of the chief reasons for bankruptcy in the United States of America, is medical bills from people who have insurance. And if you know
my medical bills, my kid has been sick. I've had a number of like small surgeries. And my kid has been sick for about 3 or 4 years. My medical bills, my out-of-pocket expenses are ridiculous.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
Now,
You're a good example.
I decide that I'm not going to do things. I'm not going to buy a car. I actually car share now, so I got rid of my car expense. I'm not going to buy new clothes for myself. There are decisions that I make in order to pay.
You look terrible. I mean, meant to tell you. It's really
but at the same,
holes in your sweat.
At the same time, there are people who don't make those decisions. They say, okay, we're still going to go on vacation. We're not going to pay our bill. And that money ends up getting put right back into the insurance. Plus, the other thing that no elected official will ever say out loud is that the average IQ of the American citizen is 100. Okay? Now, our caller...
What does that mean? Is that
average?
That
means they're not that... That's average, but it's not... So we've got...
Does that mean you're not that smart?
It means you're not that smart. It means you have someone like our caller.
How high do you have to get to be smart?
I think you have to be like 118, 120.
Okay.
What are you, Marjorie?
I'm not going to say in the air.
Okay. Are you smart enough?
I'm smart enough.
Okay, thank goodness.
Okay.
No, but I mean, people who are able to really take care of their families. This isn't like Booksmart. This is smart, you know, the smart stuff.
But
they don't think that way, and
again,
they don't take care of themselves, and we end up paying for it.
But again, you know people, okay, your kid's been sick for many years, and you know people that have had dread diseases, cancer and so forth, that their insurance won't cover them anymore.
Right.
I mean,
you can't change jobs.
The problem is, it's a total scam, and I would have been one of those people that would have thought single payer was better, but we didn't get
there. But this is why I'm so disappointed in this president. This is why, you know, why did they screw this up? Why?
Well, that's a big unanswered question.
I mean, this is the big issue.
That is a big unanswered question. Why did they screw it up? And we don't know why they screwed it up. But he is apologizing. Let's play one more clip from yesterday when he's doing the football metaphor, when he was doing his apology tour to explain this terrible screw up, which is what it is. Here he is.
If I fumble the ball, you know, I'm going to wait until I get the next play, and then I'm going to try to run as hard as I can and do right by the team. So, you know, ultimately, I'm the head of this team. We did fumble the ball on it, and what I'm going to do is make sure that we get it fixed.
Worst socialist ever. He is the worst socialist president ever.
Well, here's the other problem with us talking about fumbling the ball in the football analogy. Remember when he threw out the first pitch?
Yeah, with his mom pants on. He had on his mom jeans.
Mom pants, and he threw like a girl, and he missed home plate.
He didn't throw like a girl, Marjorie. He threw like a little boy. Girls throw better than that.
It was a lousy throw, and you thought, oh, my God.
So he did have on mom jeans.
That's the best you can do. Don't do it. I mean, you're supposed to be a little bit macho if you're the president of the United States.
I just don't understand. I don't know. You know, let's just, for the sake of argument, say this is a great plan. This is just what America needs. Isn't this wonderful? How do they screw it up like that?
Well, we don't know. We don't know because there was no buck stop here person
in terms of
the person that was doing the IT stuff. You know, there were all these cooks in the kitchen. There are still too many cooks in the kitchen, if you ask me. 877-301-8970. Is Obamacare going to survive? There are people who think, a lot of conservative Republicans still think it's not going to survive. And there are people who think from the insurance industry and people like me who are nervous about these things who are wondering if it's going to stay. Let's go to Michael from Roxbury. What do you think, Michael?
Hello, Marjorie. Hello, Sue. Thank you very much for taking my call.
How are you?
You know, I'm kind of frustrated because I'm one of those self-employed Massachusetts citizens who bought really expensive insurance. Mm-hmm. I have the Platinum plan for my insurance company, the most expensive insurance that they sell, and my insurance was canceled. And it's really... It's such a bummer. I voted for this president twice. I believe, you know, part of the reason I purchased the most expensive plan was obviously the coverage that I would get. But I also knew that any money that I didn't use from my policy would help other people. That's what it's all about. I get it. I believe in it. But to have my insurance canceled.
Yeah, why was it canceled?
Well, you know what? Chances are I'll never know because I cannot get on the Massachusetts website to find out what my new insurance plan would look like.
Well, Michael, I got on yesterday. I have happy news. I got on yesterday. It took me about 5 minutes. So don't give up. It was working pretty well yesterday afternoon.
Do you think, Michael?
Well, it's been hours and hours that I've tried. And just the other thing that I really wanted to say is one of the things that Washington is talking about right now, all these Democrats are talking about, how is this going to affect my upcoming election.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this just makes me sick. It makes me sick because these people say that they believed in it, that they believed in this plan. You know what? It's a giant, giant healthcare plan. Nobody can say that it was going to come off without a hitch. I think it's terrible what's happening. But the bottom line is there are bumps and glitches all along the road. It happened here in Massachusetts when we, you know, began state healthcare here. There were all kinds of glitches and all kinds of problems. The first enrollment period, 128 people signed up.
Right.
But it wasn't national news like it is because people want this to fail. You know, I'm really frustrated, but I'm more frustrated by all these Democrats jumping ship because they have an election coming up.
Well, Michael, I want to find out when you get through, I want to find out if the plan you're going to get is going to be better and less expensive. Or equal and less expensive, and as upsetting
that's what
as
I'm really hoping for.
Yeah, as upsetting as it is about the Democrats, you know, they got to get reelected, and I don't really have a partisan hat on when elections come up because it does no good if you don't get reelected if for your ideology. But at the same time, the fact that the Republicans are just rubbing their hands in glee about the fact that the bulk of Americans who need this the most aren't even able to get this is, I think, a much more disgusting point of view than
and
trying to get
reelected. What's really disgusting, too, if you want to get partisan about it, is that in these states...
The ones that need it the most.
In a lot of poor states, they would not expand Medicaid,
right.
enabling... So there's this big gap of people who are too poor to qualify for Medicaid, but too...
Well, and Kentucky is a really great example
right. yeah,
of that.
Kentucky's a great example of that. Mississippi...
They're about to go worst to first.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people are signing up like crazy, but the two senators in Washington who represent that state want it to fail.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. Now, Michael, you're absolutely right. Thank you very much for the call. It's true. I think there's 36.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say 36. I'm not sure. But there's quite a few states that have not
Kentucky's about to become the
Medicaid.
Jewel of the South. They're about to go from worst to first because of this coverage.
Let's go to Brian in Boston. What do you think, Brian? Are you depressed or are you hopeful that in the end it will all turn out okay?
Well, I think in the end it'll all turn out okay.
Oh, good.
All right, goodbye, Brian.
The part that aggravates me is the journalism on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
I wish all of you would admit you've got a team and you're on it and you're advocating for them. You're not doing neutral journalism.
Well, it depends on who you're talking about. Who are you talking about? Are you talking about...
That does, then assume the worst in everything a Republican does.
Yep.
When Katrina happened, you guys ganged up on Bush, rightly so. Well, why don't you show the same thing now and gang up on Obama?
Oh, well, I think people
the
are.
The New York Times is ganging up on Obama.
You spent a lot of time saying, well, your plan is getting canceled because it's much worse. Oh, this guy says his was better. I want to see his plan. That does not sound
No, I do. I don't. Listen, I know is from the facts that I have seen. I haven't done any independent investigation, but from what I have learned, most of the plans getting canceled are worse. And I meant that as an open question. I'm really interested to find out if his plan is better.
Democrat.
Say again?
From the Democrat.
I'm
you
sorry.
Just had a call of city, had a platinum plan. Well, I want to see it.
No, I don't want to see his platinum plan. I want to see if he gets what I'm hearing from people who have excellent plans that were canceled, and this is just anecdotal, and anecdotes don't make data. But what I'm hearing is that the plans that they have are being replaced by plans that are equal to and less expensive. His gripe was he couldn't really get on to the connector to find the answer. And that's the part about reacting not to anecdotes but to actual data. And that's where I agree with you. I think the media is falling down, where we're reporting on these anecdotes, but we're not digging in to actually compare the plans.
Brian, it's a bad connection, so I'm not shutting you off just because you're going in and you're going out, and it's hard on listeners' ears. 877-301-8970. Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows is in here filling in for the vacation.
And I'm not on the Obama. I'm on the people side. I'm on the we need insurance so that things won't. I'm for the people.
The people.
I'm the people. I'm a socialist.
Against the people, actually.
I'm all for socialized medicine. I think I'm not kidding when I think everyone accused him of being a socialist. He's the worst socialist on the face
of
the earth.
We weren't going to get a single-payer system through. I mean, many physicians are for a single-payer system, but we weren't going to get it through. So this is sort of an insurance company system. But again, like I said before, the mass connector is better today than it was this week. So people should try again if they've been frustrated with it. Let's go to Susan in the car. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi, Marjorie. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for calling.
And I'm your guest. I'm sorry.
Sue O'Connell. It's a hard name to remember. It's Sue.
Same as yours.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just got onto the show now.
That's okay.
But I'm actually a nurse, and I've been screaming about this forever. The thing is, I'm an Obama supporter, but I'm extremely disappointed in this. Extremely, because how I see it is, as long as the insurance companies are involved in the equation, this is never going to take off. It is never going to take off. The insurance companies are all, I mean, I just for 30 years being a nurse, they're all about making money. And again, with Sue, I'm 100% for socialized medicine. And I'm sick and tired when I say that. People go, oh, and other nurses say that. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. We're in here to take care of people. Why can't, you know, I just don't understand that. And the other one that kind of gets me is when I talk to someone who's on Medicare and they'll say, oh, socialized medicine, and I'm nice about it. I don't want to be mean, but I'll say to them, well, you're on Medicare. And they'll say, yeah, and I'll say, well, nicely. I love my patients. I'll say, but you know, that's a socialized program. And
you know,
I'm looking at slides like, really?
The people I had a wonderful conversation with somebody whose brother has been on, what's the one when you're young, Medicaid?
If you're poor.
And, right. Yeah. So he's been on that since he was 30. He's had 3 open heart surgeries. He's had 2 knee replacements. He's had gastric bypass surgery. And and the family is against Obamacare. I'm like, who is paying for that?
Yeah.
Who is paying for all of his surgeries?
I just get frustrated, maybe because I'm in the business, so I know it better than a lot of people, but I find there's a lot of ignorance. And people say, I hate Obamacare, and I'll say to them, well, I don't like it either, but I guarantee you it's not for the same reason that you don't like it. When I ask people, they just don't like it, because it's President Obama.
Exactly. Susan, you hit the nail on the head. Thank you for the call. Yeah. I mean, there was a great piece, I think it was Jay Leno, or I forget, it was one of the late night guys that went out in the street, and maybe it was Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel, thank you very much. Chelsea Murray is our producer. Jimmy Kimmel goes out in the street and says, now, what do you think of Obamacare? I hate it. Absolutely. I hate it. What do you think of the Affordable Care Act? You know, that sounds pretty good. They asked about 5 or 6 people. They all hated Obamacare because it had to do with Obama, and they liked the Affordable Care Act because it was the Affordable Care Act.
Well,
you know,
as
I'm saying?
Gay person, I can relate to that, because when you talk about same-sex marriage and people say, oh, I'm against it. What are you against? The gay part. You know, it's not about the marriage. So I can completely relate to that. But this is a conversation we're going to keep on having, Marjorie.
Yes.
And hopefully it'll get all rectified soon. But when we come back, we are going to speak with Callie Crossley. She's going to join us for her take on this week's headlines and the news that went under the radar. That's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
The important thing for caregivers to know is what's available, how to access it, how to supervise care, especially if it's coming from outside, and also to ask for help.
Now I don't have this anxiety, this guilt, because I know she's being cared for.
You're Not Alone, a week of focus coverage on caring for our elderly parents from WGBH News, this week on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is made possible thanks to you and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, dedicated to helping its members live happier, healthier lives. It's not just Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, it's Blue Cross Blue Shield of you. And Fox Hill Village of Westwood, providing retirement living to active seniors for over 20 years, which now includes White Oak Cottages and its new concept in memory care. FoxHillVillage.com, WhiteOakCottages.com.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy has the day off. I am Marjorie Egan, here with Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows on the South End News. And here with us as well in Studio 3, as she joins us every Friday, is Callie Crossley, host of Under the Radar. Thank you for coming in, Callie.
Hey, Marjorie. Hey, Sue.
I've been dying to talk to you about this Martha's Vineyard Casino, because I think you spent a day or two down there at Oak Bluffs with all the fine, snazzy, chic African-Americans that go there in the summer. Haven't you gone there once or twice where the elites meet down there, Callie?
I try to live there as much as I can.
You like the vibe.
I do like the vibe there.
But what's the geography now? Oak Bluffs is at one end of the island. The casino is at one end of the island.
Yeah, the casino is at Aquinnah.
Aquinnah.
That's where the white people are.
No, that's where Native Americans are.
Yeah, okay. There's a proposal. If people don't know this, Deval Patrick says this isn't going to happen because of some legalities involving the tribe down there, but there's a proposal to have a small casino in Aquinnah over in Gayhead. That's Gayhead, right?
Aquinnah.
Where Jackie O used to have her estate that Caroline still owns. They're not doing a big deal thing. They're going to rehab this building and have like a sloth parlor. But now you're at the other end of the island with the elite meeting every summer.
No, I'm actually all over the island. In fact, I have friends who live in Aquinnah, mm-hmm. and I spend some time up there, and it's just extremely distressing to me.
Okay, I think so too.
Because, you know, the thing about the island, I know there's a lot of about who comes there and mm-hmm. all the celebrities, but first, it's just a beautiful place.
It is.
And so much of it is still unspoiled, despite the hordes of us who come in the summer. And I'm one of the summer visitors. I have friends there who are year-rounders and yep. others who own property. But when you get there, you're just struck by the nature of it and just drawn in by it. Now, this is an island that does not have chain stores. Mm-hmm. There is no McDonald's. So the idea of
I didn't know that.
On the entire island.
I did not know that.
I'm a freeloader. You know, so I freeload in Martha's Vineyard. And I freeload in Nantucket.
It's the way to go.
We're kidding around about the divisions on the island, but there's not a, like, this is where the working people live,
That's
and this
right.
is where the rich people live. It's a great, huge island that is just filled with locals and folks that have been there for generations and the great mixture of people's cultures.
Absolutely.
And it's a great, great place. And it is hard to imagine something like this happening.
I just am so distressed about it because I think about, and Aquinnah is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, as you said, it's way on the other end of the island from Oak Bluffs, and there are many towns in between. But I think about, this is give you a sense of what Aquinnah is like. Now, this is the summer. I'm
yep.
there in the summer, right?
Yep.
Imagine, the hordes are there, just to let you know the community feel.
Yeah.
I once forgot the address of someone who lived in Aquinnah. I said to my friend, said, we're going to have to turn around. I said, no, let's drive up. The cop is there in the little tiny town, you know, center there where there's a few shops. And I said, I described, you know, who it was. He said, oh, yeah, go down to the right and turn.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so the idea of, you know, sort of having that spoiled by just people who come because they don't really care about the island, but just care about gambling upsets me.
Here's my two questions for you from the other point of view. One is I don't really believe in the whole magic potion of these casinos. You know,
yeah.
I build it and they'll come. I don't really see folks traveling to the vineyard just to go to whatever little gaming parlor they have when you can take boats out of Lynn, Mass, and folks aren't getting on those to play.
Well, there's yes and no to that, Sue, and I will say this. Because of so many of the articles written about, you know, as Marjorie would say, the hoi polloi and the celebrities mm-hmm. being there, a lot of people have arrived. I have a good friend who's a filmmaker. He says, I have so many friends who want to come and visit me in the summer. And then they get here and they go, okay, so what are we doing?
I
say to them, we don't do anything.
This
that is
it.
The point.
Right, right.
But
yeah.
they are coming because they're drawn by that. So I believe that there will be people drawn by
mm-hmm.
that as well and not getting that there is nothing to support all the other stuff. I also have a pal that bought a house in Aquinnah. And one of the things he says is, I know if you roll up to my door and say I just dropped by, you're lying because there's nothing around here.
That's always
so,
true.
So, you know, to have,
yeah.
there will be other infrastructure that will come up. It'll have to support that.
What about the standpoint from the tribe's view, though? I mean, you know, here we have this, do we agree that, you know, here they were there first, this is their right, this is the, you know, the settlement that our nation has brokered with them, that they have this right to do this, and how do we feel about that?
Well, I mean, I get that. It's just that we got ourselves in this pickle by voting this stuff in, as Scott Harshberger would remind us.
Mm-hmm.
So if we weren't discussing it anywhere in the state, I mean, even Governor Patrick said yesterday, if it was coming in his neighborhood, he'd vote no.
Oh,
nobody wants it.
Revere wants it.
Oh, that's true.
Revere
okay.
wants it.
Yeah.
Everett wants it. My hometown of Fall River wants one, even though they don't have an official site proposed for there. So my feeling is, if Everett wants it, it's going to be a pain in the neck for Boston, but Everett wants it. So
let have
Everett
it.
Have it. 86% of the people. I just don't see that year-rounders or the summer people who probably can't vote because it's their second home, but I don't even see year-rounders going. You know what I want to ask you about this?
Their visitors will come. So you'll get a lot of guests.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't see this passing if there were some kind of vote.
Well, I can't either, but then you run into, this is not a decision that necessarily can go to a vote
right.
if it can be a sovereign decision.
Yeah, because they're a sovereign
it's
nation, you know.
On the, in the part
so
of the
island.
So they
don't have to go through the whole thing everybody else does.
And if I'm thinking
then you're
about,
in trouble, Callie.
Then I'm thinking about the unfinished community center, if this is the one
yep,
I'm
yep.
thinking about.
Yep.
It's in a lovely location. and it's near the library. I don't want all those people messing up my road to the library.
You know I read about something this morning. I was looking about Martha's Vineyard and Oak Bluffs. What are the cottagers? This is a group of all women that go together in the summer and they live in the same cottage? Or what's the deal with the cottagers?
No, the cottagers are a group of black people. They weren't all women, who established a community back in the day when there were very few places for black people to stay without segregation. Mm-hmm. The island was one of the first places or one of the places to turn that around. But, you know, initially, if you were looking for some place to stay in these, you know, there wasn't the availability. So they built homes, they opened them up, they made inns, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and that's the tradition. That's what
I thought they were women.
No.
Oh,
no.
That's a goal of a lot of my female friends, you know, because husbands usually die sooner than the women, that when they get to be like 60, 70.
Well, you could find a place on the
They could all get a girl's house together, you know, and sort of
just go knock on someone's door, Marjorie. See what happens.
So let's move on. Let's talk about this guy down at the Miami Dolphins, this incognito fellow.
What a
weird
great name.
That
it's a great
is.
Name
incognito.
For him to have.
And the allegations that he was bullying, hazing, calling this guy Martin, the other player who left the Miami Dolphins, calling him racist things, threatening to kill him and stuff like that. What is your take on this situation?
Well, this is Charlie what we're Crossley. Doing for Lanyap, this Creole for Something Extra in Under the Radar. I was struck when I first read it. I said, okay, I bet this has something to do with the fact that both of them are millennials. There's an age difference. Jonathan Martin, who's the rookie, is 24. The other guy is older than that, incognito. Because I'm listening to Incognito say, we're buddies. We did this. Now, it is possible for him to be delusional about it, but I think they were both delusional in some kind of post-racial situation in which Martin felt like, well, I go along to get along because I'm the rookie, but also because now nobody's supposed to say that the N-word has that kind of power.
Yeah.
It's divorced from the history. So I have a very thoughtful, insightful guy, Professor Michael Jeffries from Wellesley College, to really deconstruct what was going on underneath this. We're not getting into did somebody hit somebody mm-hmm. or not or blah, blah, blah. We're just talking about what does it mean that these two guys were exchanging this kind of language in the locker room. And how old are they? Does that mean something? It does. What does it mean to have this divorce from history? It does. All of that kind of conversation. In your paper, I note this in the conversation, Jerry Callahan wrote a piece saying at the end of one of Richie Incognito's horrific voicemails, which he says is horrific, he says to Jonathan Martin, call me back, okay? Like he has no idea.
He does.
Well,
heck is going on here?
You know, and this it's not just millennials, too, but this reminds me of an African-American police, Boston police captain back in, like, 1998. And the motorcycle cops were upset with him. And they wanted to make a point about how constricting he was. So they tied a noose around his motorcycle, around his lock or something, completely, they say, and to some degree, I believe them, mm-hmm. unaware of the historical importance. They were just trying to haze him in a way.
Yeah.
And it is the difference between the lack of our education between historical icons and historical facts and how people are just completely unaware of them and sometimes It kind of speaks to this issue as
it does
well.
Speak
you know?
And then you have, on top of that, the fact that sports is huge. And so we're talking about whether or not anybody wants to look at any of these people as models, and I hesitate to call them role models. A lot of that behavior is going to be modeled elsewhere mm-hmm. because these are the big sports guys. It must be okay. It's all part of this hipster thing. Mm-hmm. It's okay if I call you this and you call me that because we're all post-racial and it's okay. It's not okay.
You know, well, beyond the racial stuff here, I was stunned, not being an expert on the NFL, that they tape rookies to the goalposts. That's
Marjorie,
kind of the rookie
just recently
hazing.
They were paying bonuses for people who hurt people in the game. My big issue with this, there's a lot of issues, but my takeaway from this is that the NFL is a workplace. Okay, these are employees. These are workers.
That's a very
good
point.
And if the military, right, this is why gay people don't come out in sports. They can come out in the military. They can come out now on the workforce. They can come out on the battlefield, but they can't come out in the locker room because these grown children behave in such a way in a workplace where they're getting paid and people are making a lot of money off them, and they are unable to be mature in such a way that they can still have fun and still play their game and still get paid without acting like complete
adolescence.
And still roughhouse, as we used to say in the old days, but not take it to this level.
Right.
So, you know, I recognize that we all know that in my conversation is really focused on this one thing.
Yeah.
Though I know there's much. And remember, Jonathan Martin just now is meeting with the owners. And then Richie Incognito has come out and has sued the team saying, you know,
he was
you
don't told have, to do this, too. Yeah, that's what he's saying.
You don't have the right to keep me suspended without pay. You know, I should be able to.
Well, there was a very interesting piece somewhere that I read talking about how the NFL, and they're talking about the guys that are the linemen for the most part, the tackles and the defensive guys and stuff like that. You want them to act like total lunatics on the football field. And is it crazy to expect that when they get off the football field, they're not going to be lunatics? They're like juiced up to the ninth degree and probably literally juiced up in some of these cases. So the whole thing was just a very disturbing
picture. Well,
you've
written about what happens off the field, and, you know, domestic abuse. I mean,
yes.
So, I mean, this is what happens.
It's just a very disturbing picture into, my God, what is wrong with these people? What does Giselle think of this? I don't know. Giselle Bundchen and Tom Brady. Certainly Tom Brady isn't carrying on this.
He's walking her dog. I don't think we really need to worry about Tom Brady. I mean, he's got that little dog. He's going to get her coffee every morning.
Yeah, that's right. I think
She's the breadwinner. Remember,
the dog died? The little tiny dog died. They've got the pit bull. They stole the pit bull, but they have a little dog.
Okay.
Well, you are upset about... I'm not sure where you are. There's
what's
a merger of the airlines, Callie.
Yeah, I'm very worried about it because, first of all, U.S. Air and American, the merger of it means there's only going to be four major airlines. And they say, well, a couple of things. First of all, this deal was supposed to be before the Justice Department, because the Justice Department raised, wait a minute, you're going to be squeezing out a lot of people. This is not good for consumers. And days before they were to go to trial and discuss it all, the Justice Department said, oh, never mind. And so now the merger will go through. They claim that the part of this that they say they have to do is to give up slots and gates in each of the cities that they operate in, so that they not only are not just gigantic and take up the space they already have and get to keep everything, they have to give it over to other low-cost carriers. So maybe JetBlue gets more, maybe Southwest gets more. But, you know, we'll see. And that's their argument that will keep the consumers' protections in place, because if you have the low-cost carriers able to expand to these slots, that means that they can't get away with just jacking up prices. Now, I don't know about you all.
Yeah.
Have you tried to get an airline ticket? And do you know how much they've gone through the roof?
I've not tried lately.
Do you know how much it costs to go on a shuttle between here and New York?
No, I do not. How much?
Do you remember how much it used to be?
$75.
Well, let's not go back that far. But I mean, in more recent times,
it
was like
the train.
$200 something.
Yeah.
$630.
I'll drive you there for that.
I'm just telling you.
$630 to get
so
the shuttle
JetBlue's
to New York?
To go,
and I'll
JetBlue's,
drive you back.
Yeah, flight to New York from Boston then looks like a bargain at $300.
Wow.
And you're at JFK. So now you're
you gotta take the
time
cab,
suck.
Yeah,
you know. So it's a whole, I mean, these fares are crazy. I mean, they are really, and there's no leverage, because each time one of them raises them, the other one goes, oh, I can raise it too. Because you have nowhere to go if you're the consumer. You got nowhere. And they're cutting flights. So let's not even talk about what's going to be happening during the holiday season when they don't give you any sway. They're just jacking up prices everywhere. So this is bad news. And I worry that and they're charging for everything, you know, water and everything else.
Well, you know whose fault that is? Obama.
Oh, yeah, right. Let's just blame
it's
everything
Obama
on
care.
It.
It's
Obamacare. Yeah. I want to find out one thing, Callie Crossley, before you go. How come if you take I've mentioned this before, but I went overseas to visit one of my kids who was overseas at one of those overseas deals for the year. And I flew Alitalia over Air France back. You got free wine. You got this delicious food.
Socialism.
Yes.
Socialism.
And it wasn't like $7 for the peanuts. And I thought, how can they afford to compete? I don't know.
Socialism.
But it wasn't any more money for the Alitalia or the Air France flight.
Well,
but I'm going there. Too bad you can't take Alitalia to New York City.
I know. And
have a couple of martinis.
Aren't they seriously owned by the government, though? Isn't that part of it?
I don't know. Some of them
may be. Yeah, I think part of it is that it's you know.
There is some delicious pasta on Alitalia.
It's unbelievable. I felt like I was in some snazzy Italian restaurant. Okay, what do you got going on under the radar on Sunday night, Callie?
That's
what you're going to be talking about on Sunday night. Okay. All right. Callie, thank you very much for coming in, Callie Crossley. Give the time. times for Under the Radar over there, please.
Yep, Kelly Crossley, host of Under the Radar, every Sunday night at 6 for a whole hour. Yes. So we're digging it. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our coverage on aging and caregiving with a look at how movies get this topic just right. That conversation is next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Art of Tragedy, images of the Kennedy assassination and America's image of itself.
One of the great pieces of art that has come out of the assassination portrays Lee Harvey Oswald as this alienated, brutalized character.
The artists who make myths out of history, looking back and forward. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you. An innuendo in Natick presenting the Hunter Douglas Tis the Season for Style event featuring Light Rise, Cordless, Duet, Silhouette, and Vignette Shades. Hunter Douglas at Innuendo. Innuendo.com. And the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding you that learning doesn't just happen in the classroom. It happens all day, every day. Working together, parents and teachers can make this a successful school year for every child in Massachusetts.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Bradley has a day off. I am Marjorie Egan. Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows and the South End News with here with us. And so is film critic Garen Daly. We've been talking about aging issues on radio and on television all week long. And what a perfect time to take a look at the wealth of films that are out there about getting older. How is it that there are so many good films about aging, particularly when we think that the movie industry only cares about people that are 18 to 25 years old and preferably men? But that's not true, Garen Daly. You sent us over a bunch of movies to look at, half of which I'd never even heard of before. But some of them I've seen, and you're right, they're terrific. So tell us about films for getting old.
Well, I mean, let's start off at the beginning. I mean, we have an older population that is getting older and it's getting bigger. It's something like expanding three times every like generation. And the people who are making films are getting older, so they're making films about themselves.
And all they can afford to do is go to the movies from time to time. So we might as well give them a movie.
Not if they go to those big places where you have to right. You have to like reserve your seats. And
well, then you could just spend the day.
Yeah, yeah.
and not pay for heat and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, but basically we can break it down into what I'm calling the three C's because I like to be alliterative. caregivers, continuity, and community.
I thought you were going to say incontinence.
That begins with an I. You can't fool me.
They never cover that in the films, do
okay,
they?
Okay, caregivers, continuity, and what's the third one?
Community.
Okay.
All right, but let's take the caregivers. I mean, there have been some really good films about the cost of emotional as well as economic of people who have to take care of their elderly parents or their elderly spouse. I mean, think of Amour.
Amour. Oh, God.
That was one. What about Beginners? You know, the one with Christopher Plummer,
mm-hmm.
Who comes
movie.
Out late in his life as gay, and it's yep. His son trying to come to grips with
oh,
it.
Oh, that's right.
That's a great movie. That's really a great movie.
And one of the ones that I really liked was Away From Her by Sarah Polley.
Loved that.
But those are all mm-hmm. three films that just came out relatively recently about
yeah.
it.
Because Away From Her was with Julie Christie looking yeah. spectacular as she went off to the nursing home for Alzheimer's patients.
Right. And then, of course, there's the idea of her having an affair because she can't remarry, and it like kind of like payback for her husband who had an affair.
Yeah,
but it's Sarah Polley who is an incredibly interesting thing. But again, there is an emotional cost as in Away From Her talks about, as well as Amour. So there's the caregiver is a very important part of what's being talked about, and it isn't just recently. Think about when you go back to Driving Miss Daisy.
Another
right.
great movie.
Morgan Freeman
yes.
plays the caregiver to Jessica Tandy.
I don't need you. I don't want you. What are you doing?
I'm trying to drive you to the stove.
Nothing came easy.
Morning, Miss Daisy.
You leave my flower bed alone.
They didn't connect.
I just love a house of pictures, Miss Daisy.
I don't want you nosing through my things.
They couldn't agree.
You took the wrong turn at Opelika.
Well, now you took it with me, Miss Daisy. And you got the man.
They wouldn't give in.
Well, I'll help you to the door.
Thank you, Hulk. I can help myself.
Now, ain't just some back of the neck you look at while you're going wherever you got to go. I'm a man.
What a great movie. He took that can of beans, and thank goodness he put it back, I'll tell you.
Okay, I have to admit, I never saw that movie.
Oh, it's a great
movie.
They
reconcile, I assume, at some point.
Well, reconcile's a strong word.
Well, they're friends. That's really what you walk away
with. That's their relationship.
Okay,
And it crosses all across social, economic. I mean, she's Jewish in a very white-dominated society. He's black in obviously a white-dominated society. It's how these two outcasts come together, but he kind of takes care of it because she's isolated in many, many ways.
Now, who goes? I wonder, because Amour was a big movie, what, 2 years ago?
Last year, yeah.
Last year. Who goes to see these movies? I mean, I went to see it, and I was a basket case when I got out of there, I have to admit. But, I mean, does it get that younger demographic? I would guess not.
No, it doesn't get that younger.
And doesn't that mean no money for these big movie makers?
I think you have to put it into perspective. I mean, here's a perfect example. Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, which, by the way, they're making a sequel of. With Richard Gere as in the lead,
He's aged well. I must say
he looks better now than he did in Jaws. That's for sure.
but take that film for an example. That is a film that cost about $10 million to make, but it grossed $134 million globally. Now that's an extreme example of what happens with these films. Normally they gross about $3 or $4 million, but they only cost about $1 million to make. So it is a profit oriented film.
Did Amour do well?
Amour did okay. I mean, Amour did about $3 or $4 million and probably only cost about, you know, $500.
No, Marigold's a very accessible movie, you know, and it's also the on-demand. I don't think people take into account enough when you're sitting home with your parents or, you know, you've got family over. You want to watch a movie you can all watch. And those movies sometimes, like, you know, Marigold, fall into that category.
Well, what's nice about Marigold, too, because it brings me to my next C, which is all about community.
Mm-hmm. Community.
Because when you talk about it, the plot of Best Exotic Marigold Hotel is we're outsourcing our old people, but they form a community to be able to talk amongst themselves and join together.
Come and spend your autumn years in an Indian palace.
This is the day.
It's a luxury development where all the residents are in their golden years.
Like the coast of Florida?
Yeah, but with more elephants.
Flight 247 to Delhi is boarding now.
Would you like some of this? I believe it's called aloo carparata.
Now, if I can't pronounce it, I don't want to eat it.
That sounds pretty good.
It is. You didn't see the film?
No. Oh, it's a great. And it also, you know, it deals with the issues of British colonialism and, you know, healthcare issues, all just sort of these.
Sexual preference.
Yeah.
You're a little movie buff.
Well, I'm home a lot.
But you know,
the on-demand button.
But the idea of community in these movies is another really big one. A great film that is a documentary is Young at Heart.
Love that. Okay. Love that.
That's a perfect example of what happens when you bring people together and they still do it. Another one.
Hold on. Tell people what that's about.
Oh, well, Young at Heart is about the Northampton Choir of Seniors that goes out and sings rock and roll songs.
It's great.
The version of the Ramones of "I Want to Be Sedated." It's just a lot of fun, and they made that into the movie "The Unfinished Song" with Terrence Stamp and Maggie Smith as Vanessa Redgrave. I'm sorry. So there's a variation of
it's
that.
It's fun. It's funny and it's fun, and they have a great scene with everybody singing to a bunch of prisoners.
Yes, that's good. And
you don't have Cocoon on this.
Well, Cocoon is on my lower list.
Oh, is it lower list?
I sent you a list.
He's moving along. Oh, right. Okay. He's moving along.
Just checking.
Some on the community, though, another one would be A Christmas Carol, which is, you know, again, that's all about community because Scrooge needs to be part of the community.
Yep.
And Up, the Pixar film.
Oh, God, I love that
film,
too.
With Mr. Fredrickson.
Okay, explain that just in case people don't know it.
Well, Mr. Fredrickson is this old septuagenarian who lives in his house by himself.
Ed Asner.
And who goes on an adventure with a little Boy Scout. Well, not a Boy Scout. I can't remember what it was. Wildlife guy. Yeah.
Accidental adventure.
And they go on this adventure together, and they bond together and become, you know, like grandfather and son, mm-hmm. or grandson.
So is there anything new about this? I mean, because, you know, we are getting older. The baby boomer is the biggest demographic group, I guess, ever in the United States, is getting older. So is this about appealing to boomers, or have there always been these films?
Well, there have always been these films. There's actually one from 1937 called, I can't remember what the name is. I'll find it in a second. It's in my notes here. But there was one in 1937 that dealt with exactly what happened when older parents lost their house in the Depression and had to move in with their kids. It was directed by Leo McCarey. I think it was not something got to give. Anyway, I'm looking at
don't
my
worry,
notes and trying
worry.
To find
it. But it's not new.
It's not new. And then you take a look at some of the films, you know, in the 50s and 60s. It's approached. But what's happening now is it's becoming much more of a common theme. You're seeing a lot of films coming out like that. For instance, coming up in this Christmas is Philomena, a Judi Dench film, mm-hmm. where it's about a woman trying to find her son, who she gave up for an adoption a long time ago. So though these films are constantly cropping up.
And that's
up.
Already getting pre-rave reviews. And I saw that the movie trailer at the theater, and the trailer Enough is enough to give her an Academy Award on it. It was just amazing.
Well, Judi Dench is perhaps the exponent of so much of these films. For instance, think about her as M.
Oh.
And the James Bond.
She was great.
She is so incredible and so strong that she is a perfect example of what goes to my next C, continuity and continuing on.
Mm-hmm. In that.
You don't like me, Bond. You don't like my methods. You think I'm an accountant, a bean counter, more interested in my numbers than your instincts.
The thought had occurred to me.
Good. Because I think you're a sexist, misogynist dinosaur, a relic of the Cold War, whose boyish charms, though wasted on me, obviously appeal to that young woman I sent out to evaluate you.
Point taken.
Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to call in with their favorite movies dealing with elder themes, feel free to do so at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. We're talking with Garen Daly, who is an expert on these older films. What about older romance? I mean, is everybody sort of old and creaky, or are there some older? They had this thing on WGBH, this Halifax series. It was about this old, I'm not getting the name right, but it's something like that. Romance in Halifax, or Last Tango in Halifax. God, the producers have such a better memory than I do. Last Tango in Halifax, which is about this 70-something couple falling in love. So do we have any of those, or is it all about decline and decay?
Well, it's not all about decline decay. By the way,
good.
I wanted to say it's Make Way for Tomorrow is my 1937 film that I couldn't remember before.
Okay.
Just needed to get that
there
out there.
Go.
But go back to Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
Harold and Maude. That was a great
movie.
One. Much older woman with quite a young man.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that was way back in the 70s, mm-hmm. with, directed by Hal Ashby with Ruth Gordon and Bud Cort. And that's an example of an older woman, a younger man. But, you know, there are other ones that I'm trying to think of, like, other, you know, Amour is a perfect example of, again, a long-term relationship.
It's true.
That would be another
one.
It
wasn't very sexy.
Hope Springs.
Hope Springs would be another one. Red.
Red.
I don't know if you read, you know, Retired, Extremely Dangerous.
Oh, Helen,
I love that.
Oh, it's great.
I love that. Helen, did you say Helen Mirren?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
Helen
Mirren.
She's
a very attractive older woman.
She's one of the best looking 70-year-olds
I've
ever.
Really,
you want to know
is.
My top three women over 70 that I would marry in a heartbeat?
Absolutely.
Okay. Helen Mirren.
Yeah. Yep.
Angela Lansbury. I have a wicked crush on Angela Lansbury, and Judi Dench.
Yeah,
those are
pretty good, huh?
They are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But tell us about this movie with Genevieve Bujold, who's like 70 years old now, with her.
Really. She's 70 now?
Is that not in your list?
That's amazing.
I'm not sure. You have to give me the title.
Oh, it's about the guy that was in Babe.
Oh.
He's an elderly guy, and he's James Cromwell.
Yep.
And Genevieve Bujold, they're making this movie. Maybe it's not out yet, but they're this elderly couple, and he's trying to keep her. She fell. And
oh, in the house, the little house that he builds
a little house,
Canada.
And they don't let him. The house isn't built according to building codes. But I thought, wow, Genevieve Bujold is in her 70s. She was in that great movie. movie with Clint Eastwood. Of course, Clint Eastwood is in his 80s, so I guess why should I be surprised?
But again, think about that. Clint Eastwood is in his 80s, still making films.
Yes.
You know, Judy Dench is in her 70s, still making films. This is what's happening. I mean, we are now redefining, the baby boomers are now redefining what it is to like to be old. And that's showing up in the movies on many, many different levels.
Okay, we got a couple of people calling in with their favorite movies. Let's start with Sue from Natick. What's yours, Sue?
Hi. I saw a great movie, and I got it from the Netflix queue. It's French, and it's subtitled, but oddly enough, Jane Fonda plays one of the... It's about this group of friends. They're getting older, and they're sort of watching each other fail, and they decide to live together rather than have their relatives put each one of them separately into homes and how the couples are aging together. Anyway, great cast. Jane Fonda and Geraldine Chaplin. It's just amazing. It's
wow.
Something like All Together. The French title is different than the English title. It's
All
like
Together.
Translation.
You're right,
something
Sue.
Something like All Together. Yep.
Now, Sue, I'm dying to know, Jane Fonda, who's been doing aerobics and buttocks tucks now for about 40 years, she looked great?
You know, she looks great in Newsroom.
Oh, Newsroom, she looks unbelievable.
French, so it's more, I think it's a more authentic portrayal of women. So they don't make them look great. They make them look like quirky individuals who are aging, which
Good.
Is a much more interesting look in some ways than,
Great. Thank you for the call, Sue. That's
that,
a great
that
one.
That falls into my community thing.
Yeah,
again, because,
community
again,
thing.
We're talking about people. I mean, this is another thing that a lot of the older people are experiencing is there's a fear. There's a fear of either being dependent on other people. There is a fear of Alzheimer's. There's a fear of all these new fears. And again, the films are trying to address them. And somehow, maybe we can reach some sort of conclusion about what it's all about.
You know, Garen, that leads me to the question I was going to ask, that, you know, so many films, when they're on the cutting edge, and in a sense, this is the cutting edge because of the baby boomer generation, tend to be aspirational. You know, this is where we want to be. This is where we want to go. Do you find that these films focus on folks over 55 are really kind of saying this is what we want, this is where we hope to be, or are they more this is where we are?
I think what it is for me anyways, it's not so much that this is where we are and this is what we want to be. This is how to do it with grace.
Mm-hmm.
This is how to do it with knowing that you are leaving a legacy behind. And something like with Unfinished Song, where Vanessa Redgrave dies in that, the legacy is that her husband, played by Terrence Stamp, becomes a singer and sings this beautiful song for
right.
her at the end. And that's her legacy. And I think we see that with even with Amour. There is a legacy about the beauty of that long-term relationship.
Yeah, they really loved each other.
They really loved each other. It's great.
It was so real. It was tough. Jane from Denham, do you have a favorite movie about getting old?
I do, and I don't know if there are any Paul Giamatti fans out there.
Oh, love him.
But about 2 years ago, a film he starred in called Win-Win, and got some attention, but not very much. And if you're a fan of Mr. Giamatti, you should absolutely see it. But central to the plot is his decision as a lawyer to take over the caregiving for a man who comes into his practice with no living relatives. And it's a mixture of family comedy and drama about what happens to their relationship and their family as a result. And it's a great movie. And the kind of decisions he has to make about caring for that man and taking on that responsibility.
Great.
It's wonderful. So
Jane, thank you. Thank you very much for that for that call. You know what I wanted to ask you about? Robert Redford, he's made this mm-hmm. movie.
All Is Lost?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's got to be in his 70s now.
Right.
And it's just Robert Redford, as I understand it.
That's right.
What do you think?
I think what we're seeing is actors and filmmakers tackling this question of getting old and what it really means. And it doesn't mean necessarily a lot, because here is Robert Redford doing a solo act on a sailboat mm-hmm. that is all about him surviving the elements. It's really kind of aspirational, as you were talking about, Sue.
You know, the other thing that's fascinating too, which if you compare movies today to movies even 15 years ago, you take a movie like Silver Linings Playbook, where you know, the parents, Robert De Niro and I forget that great actress's name, they're not just stand-ins, you know, and they're not just like the crazy parents. They actually are fleshed out characters that have their own stories, which I think in previous generations, they just would have been toss-offs.
You know, when I was doing my research, I started thinking about Walter Brennan.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Walter Brennan was the quintessential.
Yep. Yeah,
but you think about the Real McCoys, you know, the TV show that was on near the end of his career.
Yep.
He plays this cantankerous with lots of quirks, and he's kind of like grumpy and all this. We had a lot of grumpy old men. Now we're getting, as you said, more fleshed out characters. But, you know, I wanted to go back when Jane was talking about Win-Win. I was thinking about Akiru, which is a Japanese film from 1951. And it's about one of those bureaucrats.
How do you spell that?
I-K-I-R-U.
Okay.
And it's about a bureaucrat who realizes he has cancer. And what he decides to do is he's going to create a legacy for himself. So he decides to build a playground for the kids in his neighborhood, even though they don't like him.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's a wonderful film, but it's 1951 and it's Japanese.
The Gran Torino sort of thing.
Then
exactly.
they can feel bad when they play on it.
You don't think of good stuff.
No, that's what my mother would do. I can absolutely see her having left a will where somebody would have to feel bad about getting it from her.
Let's take one more call. Bob from Gloucester, you got a favorite film?
The Whales of August.
Oh.
I don't know it. What? Tell us.
It was shot in August. It was Betty Davis's last movie, I think.
Right.
The Lillian Gish. And they were like fifth that reconciled the long life of kind of dispute.
Rob, thank you.
That's a very good film.
Yep.
Betty Davis is scary to me. She always was scary.
That was a great film when it came out. But it also talks about something. There's reconciliation with a lot of these films. Think about David Lynch's The Straight Story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know the story or not. Based on a true story, it's about a guy, an older guy, who no longer has his license, played by Richard Farnsworth, and he ends up getting on his lawnmower and driving all the way to reconcile with his brother, who he hasn't spoken to in 15 years.
Oh, that's great.
And so there's this kind of reconciliation. Again, getting things in order before they go on to the next phase.
Now, is there anything here you haven't got a chance to tell us about that you want
to
tell us
about? Oh, there were a lot. I mean, there's The Visitor, which is another good film. Iris, which is another good.
Iris. Oh, my goodness. That was Iris Murdoch, the writer? Was that the one?
That was, yeah.
Yes. That was another cheerful evening at the movie theater.
There was the wonderful documentary, Zero Dreams of Sushi.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know that one. Zero Dreams of Sushi.
Yeah, it was a documentary about a sushi maker transferring his knowledge to his...
One of the callers is mentioning Quartet, the Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, that's a great one, too.
A very good film, again. And surprising, because it's Dustin Hoffman's first directorial debut.
And that was the Old Folks Home for Musicians.
Right.
Yeah, that was a terrific movie.
Again, Community going on. The Up series...
You know, about the people going through their whole life.
Going through the life. So that kind of gives you.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked Atlantic City as another example of an older guy. Mm-hmm. Louis Ma with Burt Lancaster.
Yes.
I mean, literally, I've got like about 50 of them.
Okay.
60 of them. I mean, we can go. You know, there's Arsenic and Old Lace.
What's the movie about the.
Harold and Maude, one of the
Hoffman with Hoffman and. You know, the children get together to go take care of their dad, who they've been estranged from. I can't think of the actress who's in The Big C. It's suddenly drawing a blank.
The blonde woman that interviews Masterpiece.
This is what,
this is terrible.
Laura Linney.
What would we do without two guys in there whose brains are still intact?
Laura Linney.
Oh, no, they've got the IMDb right in front of them.
That's okay. Laura Linney and Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, yes, that's right.
What was that called? Oh. That was called...
I'm not sure.
I love that. I saw that movie in bunches. I didn't see the whole thing. I saw the end first. And it was just a great study. And what do you do with your parents when... You don't like them and you haven't talked to them, and suddenly the place calls you and says, come get them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean,
think about
that. That also reminds me of On Golden Pond.
Right. Yes, exactly.
We are out of time, but I just, there are a couple of people online that didn't get to come online. Julie Andrews and James Gardner met in a nursing home. Stephanie's called in about that. Quartet, we got that. And Harry and Tonto, we met.
That's a great film. Oscar winner.
Yeah, Oscar winner. And you mentioned Strangers is in Good Company. Did you not, Garen Daly?
I don't think I said that, but that's okay. I'll take credit for it.
That's a good one. That's a good one, too, supposedly.
Garen Daly, a film critic, and he's the guy behind the forthcoming documentary, The Orson Welles Complex. Garen, thanks for joining us.
When
we come back, Emily Rooney joins us for Open Mic and her list of obsessions and observations. That conversation is next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
I'm Marco Werman. Pac-Man and Peso are a young hip-hop duo from Washington, D.C. This weekend, they'll board a plane for the first time. A hip-hop promoter got them the tickets and the visas. Destination, North Korea.
I was like, damn, I want to go to North Korea. You know what I'm saying? They're serious. Like, dang, like, yeah, we're going to shoot a video in North Korea.
Two rappers create some buzz the Dennis Rodman way. That's next time on The World.
This afternoon at 3 here on WGBH Radio.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Blue Homes, builders of modern, green, precision-built homes, offering tours of the Blue Breeze House in the Hudson Valley, November 16th. More at bluhomes.com/Hudson. And the International School of Boston, whose bilingual program in French and English helps prepare students to thrive in the world of tomorrow. Open house, 1st through 12th grades, November 16th, 9 a.m. to noon. isbos.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. That's Boston Public Radio, Marjorie.
Boston.
Joining us in Studio 3, she does every Friday, for is Emily Rooney with her open mic and her world-famous list of observations and quirky complaints. You know, I was going to start with Bill Maher, but now I've changed my mind because it's not local.
Oh, boy.
I want to start with Whitey Bulger. The trial is over, and I just want to ask you one question, then you can say whatever you want about Whitey Bulger. I love the fact, and the Herald wrote about it today, and the Globe wrote about it today, Denise Casper, African-American judge. Whitey Bulger had very little use for African-Americans and very little use for women. He was abusive toward both. And I love the fact that a black woman lectured him from the bench for an hour.
She got high marks all around from virtually everyone. Because yesterday, Adam Wiley, who was covering it for us, was saying that they were fearful that, unlike somebody like Mark Wolf, who always takes the moment to reflect about the seriousness of the crime and what the person has been convicted of, that she would not do that, that she would not take the opportunity. And wow, she blew everybody away with what she had to say directly to Whitey Bulger.
You know what I was most impressed with, what she said, was also sort of taking away his celebrity. I mean, I think when he was on the run, we all had a good time with, Whitey Bulger and making jokes about it. And then for me, at least, when this trial started to unfold and hearing the victim statements and what happened and just the terror of it, he no longer became a punchline to me. And I think she did an excellent job just saying, you don't represent Boston.
She was just saying, you're not one of us.
Right.
That, you know, you had a reputation, but it's not our reputation.
But you know what was great? When it was announced that she was going to be the judge in this case, there was rampant sexism. You heard this from a lot of, you probably heard it from lawyer friends that you know, people are all around town. She's not up to the task. She hasn't been a judge long enough. She's going to screw this up. There was so much apprehension, and I think it was maybe sexism combined with jealousy, that she was going to be the judge here, and she did a great job.
Because it wasn't a brand name. No one had ever heard of her. She's African-American. She's female. People thought, oh, wow, this is like, you know, a PC placement here, but turned out to be far more than that.
Mm-hmm. So we're done. It's over.
He's going to go to Florida, I guess.
Yeah, he's going to go to Florida. And his Catherine Grigo has about 7 or 6 more years.
She's until 2018. She's got a while.
She's got a while. So she's going to be in jail for quite some time. And is it done? I mean, are we sad it's done? I guess.
No, it can't be done because something has to happen about the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just can't end it here in terms of their role in this. And somebody has got to look into that.
But who? I mean, this is what we were talking about earlier about this whole Obamacare website rollout, where once we're all past this, no one's going to talk about government contracts. It's just going to go to the side. Who's going to talk about the FBI and their role in
the media? I hope the media doesn't let it go.
It is really disgraceful. And I wrote about this in my column, and I wanted to – I find the prospect – as everyone knows, we have not heard a word out of Whitey Bulger's mouth. Unless you went to the trial physically, you couldn't hear him, you couldn't see him, you just had artist drawings. You were effectively banished in 2013 from this trial. We are now facing, we may not have a trial for Zohar Tsarnaev, the accused marathon bomber. Well, there may be some kind of deal or something.
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay, then you're assuming there's going to be a trial. If there is going to be a trial, can you imagine that our congressional delegation in Massachusetts is going to sit idly by while Zohar Tsarnaev goes on trial and 260 people that were injured, unless they physically come to the courtroom, can't see trial.
Not and then Congress could change it overnight.
They could change it overnight. For many, many years, there's been the Sunshine Bill filed, Grassley from Iowa, the senator from Charles Grassley from Iowa, who has been very tough, by the way, on the FBI. Is filed this legislation again this year. Patrick Leahy, the Democrat from Vermont, is signed on. It's a bipartisan thing. You have Chuck Schumer from D.C. I called every one of our from New York. I called every one of our legislators, and I still have not gotten an answer from
it. What are they so afraid of? I don't understand it.
I don't know. Ed Markey had some statement the last time around saying, well, we have to worry about intimidating witnesses and so forth and so on.
What about the rest of the trials?
State trials, as everybody knows. I mean, we've seen Aaron Hernandez a million times in state court. So this is, unless they change
the camera should be in the Supreme Court, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think this has to be
and
a crusade.
And execution chambers. I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, that's right.
It should be.
Who's against that?
Well,
everybody is.
Everybody's against that.
Except
they
me.
Are? Yeah. Except for Emily.
Yeah.
A lethal shot is not exactly.
But you know what?
Like
I agree with Emily, I think, in the theory that, and I also believe that everyone needs to know where their food comes from. You know, I mean, we're going to participate. If we're going to be a nation that has the death penalty, then people should watch what happens when the death penalty gets executed. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, that's
yeah. And it's, to me, it's not a political thing. People, you must be against it. No, it's my right as a citizen of the United States to see somebody executed. It's like it's our federal government, our government, I should say, in action. Why can't I see it?
Didn't you see Dead Man Walking when Sean Penn was executed in the movie? Yeah. It was pretty anticlimactic, wasn't it?
Some of the executions are very dramatic. The ones in Florida.
But the lethal injections?
Well, they don't do lethal injections there.
What do?
They do. They still do electric chair, I believe.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Hair on fire.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to check that.
Yeah, well, sometimes in the electric chairs of old, and I'm not sure if this is still true, but in olden days, sometimes you had to electrocute someone twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Well, it's still, you know, there's still the argument that it's inhumane. What we think they're getting for a painkiller is, in fact, not painkiller.
Yeah, somebody else just survived a lethal injection someplace in Nebraska or something like that. A really creepy story. And now the debate is whether they're going to try it again.
By the way, if people haven't read that book, it's by a nun, Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, it's an excellent
book. It was
a
great book that talked about the repercussions of the death penalty on the prison guards and the fact that most of the time the families who thought this was going to help them grieve found that it did nothing of the sort. So it's a great book, even though it's about 20 years old, I think, now.
Probably 30.
You know
it's been
goes.
Around for a while, but it's still pretty good. Helen Prejean, that's her name.
That's
Prejean. Okay, now this other thing, what did Bill Maher do and what do we think about it? Emily Rooney? Bill Maher, I should say, that's his name. He's from television.
He used to be politically incorrect with Bill Maher, but it's got a new name. What's the name of that show?
I don't know.
It's on HBO.
Well, do you have the quote there? He was talking about the Red Sox winning the World Series, and he was basically saying, oh, big deal, nice for you.
Yeah.
And then they took the statue, he called it, instead of a trophy, the World Series statue, and put it on the marathon finishing line, and then sang God Bless America and put the jersey over it. And he says, what is this? He says, so three people got bit. That's terrible. More people got maimed. That's terrible. But
we have some sound. We have some sound, actually, from Bill Maher from HBO, Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO, whatever it is. Here's the sound.
You know, they go to the place where the marathon bombing took place, and they put the World Series statue there, and they sing God Bless America, and they say Boston Strong, and they chant USA. You know, it was, again, a bad day. Three people died. That's terrible. More were maimed. That's horrible. But unfortunately, that happens every day in car accidents and everything else. I mean, your city was not leveled by Godzilla.
I know.
You know, you... you
since it was announced, a nice small... What's wrong with you? What's wrong
it's
with you?
Such a nice small...
And the second voice, of course, is the disgraced former Congressman Anthony Weiner, who had all his Twitter problems. He's the guy that's saying, what's wrong with you, to Bill Maher?
Yeah.
Bill Maher does
Bill Maher really missed it on this. I actually like him. He's quirky, and he tries
very quirky.
To be. He tries desperately hard, as a matter of fact, to be politically incorrect. But this was stupid because we know more people are killed in car accidents, and we know a lot more people were killed in the World Trade Center. This was a homegrown terrorist act, and that's where it happened. And it was a lovely gesture at the finish line.
You know, the part I think people also miss about this, because I heard people talking about the Sports Illustrated cover, the second one with the first responders and Big Poppy, and, you know, it's talking about why are we doing this. It happened at a sporting event. You know, I mean, we don't, for good reason, bring that up first of all, but it happened at one of our nation's and certainly our city's hallmark sporting events. So it makes sense that there's a connection between, right. You know, the winning the World Series and the slogan Boston Strong. It's a sporting event, and it really was.
Yeah, there were thousands of people along that parade route, which is the same route as the marathon.
Yep.
There's been a tremendous blowback on Bill Maher, by the way.
Yeah. There should be.
Absolutely no one. Although, if you really take a look at what he said, it's not incorrect.
No.
It's not like it wasn't on the scale
of 9/11. But it's a bad analogy. I mean, you know, a lot of people die from car accidents every day, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah, it was bad.
Okay, what's going on in China, Emily?
Yeah.
Yeah, Emily.
So last week, my list of obsessions was China.
You are obsessed with China.
So
it's clear.
I'm totally obsessed. So before we get into what happened today, did you see this thing on Monday? So Monday, 11-11, there's four ones in that, 11-11. And it's become to symbolize Lonely Men Day in China because there are no women. You know why?
Why?
Because they either aborted them and dropped them in the Yangtze. That's why.
Wow.
There are
wow.
no girls. Mm-hmm. So on Monday, men went out and spent $5.7 billion. And they buy themselves toys. I don't know what kind of toys. This is like 2.5 times what Cyber Monday brings in. And this has become to symbolize lonely men. Okay, so today, this is kind of coincidental.
That's a good point. Probably they're outnumbered.
No, it's not probably. They're completely outnumbered.
Grossly outnumbered.
Like 10 to 1?
Well, I think it's almost like... It's something phenomenal.
Having adopting a baby girl from China, the idea that you want, if you can only have one child, you still culturally want to have a boy because of the lack of social security and cultural reasons. So if you are either giving a child up for adoption or aborting a child, you are ending up with all these boys who are also, from another cultural standpoint, being spoiled because you have a culture that has so many
children.
Now,
this is a big step. After 30 years in China, they are allowing people who are single children themselves, which is most of China, by the way. So adult single children can now have more than one child when they start procreating.
Now, will they still have the girls be adopted from out of China, or will they keep the girls?
They've changed. For adoption, from my understanding, adoption within China, I mean, everybody culturally will take their in the village will raise other people's kids. I mean, that happens from the dawn of time. But people in China didn't understand the concept of adoption so much, and it also wasn't normally done. So now, over the past 5 years, the government started encouraging Chinese citizens to adopt.
Yeah,
so if they didn't have any children or have one child, they can adopt other children. So now it's become sanctioned so that the children are actually staying in China and, you know, are in a more culturally, I don't want to say appropriate, but it just makes a more national sense for the country. So it's been, again, this is sort of, I keep coming back to Obama, but this is like, they're very smart people in China, the people who run the government. How they didn't figure this out, that this was going to be a problem. You also have the underlying problem of sexual slavery, child slavery, selling women into bondage, selling women into marriage, which is happening all around the rural villages of China because there aren't enough women to marry. Mm-hmm.
They did relax the rules some time ago for some of the really rural areas because they needed farm hands.
And some ethnic groups were able to have more than one child. But it's an amazing contradiction. And plus, it's just an amazing contradiction.
How do they enforce that anyway? They come knocking on your door?
They do. They have actual people that will come to the village. They have reproduction officers.
And then you get fined or what happens?
You get fined if you have more than one child. They actually have stories of people being forced to have abortions or children being forcibly taken away.
But you also have stories about wealthy families now that the economy is
having more children
that will have 3 and 4 kids because they can afford to pay the fines.
And when you compare China to India when it comes to reproductive, India, who basically wanted to just phase in reproduction curbs so that they didn't have as much trouble, is now actually decreasing their reproduction, their population without having the same challenges that China does. It's fascinating, though.
It is
a fascinating culture.
All right. Well, let's get to the real reason that we love to talk to you every single week. Here it is, Emily's list montage.
incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
How about common sense? Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
Okay. Now, before we get into the list from this week, we need to revisit last week where there was a very big contretemps over baby lima beans. Excuse me. Let's hear about the lima beans.
I'm obsessed with baby lima beans.
What?
You cannot buy them.
What?
They're gone.
Wait,
you cannot buy them.
What? It's like baby lima beans.
Well, they come frozen in a pack, you know, just lima beans, baby lima.
Where were baby lima beans to begin with?
They used to be everywhere, Star Market, Whole Foods. I can't find them.
Okay.
Oh, boy, we got some email, we got letters, we got phone calls.
People have discovered the baby lima beans. So you're in good shape now?
I'm in good shape, but I have to say that the places that I mostly shop, I went back this week, they are not there. But people called me about Roach Brothers and a couple other places. And one person gave me a bum stare. She sent me to the bulk produce. Mm-hmm. No, those are uncooked beans.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't work.
What is it about the baby lima beans that has particularly attracted your undying love?
The big ones are mushy and kind of mealy.
Right.
The little ones are very firm and you can crunch them up.
What do you do with them? Put them in salads?
I had them last night.
Yeah.
I like to stir fry them.
Yeah.
Get them brown and
the
crunchy.
The Whole Foods mixed vegetables, the Whole Foods frozen mixed vegetables have baby lima beans.
Oh, they
beans.
Do?
Yeah.
All right, Emily. What else you got?
One contretemps. All right, I have a couple things that just, just annoy me. But I have a much more serious list today. I don't know why this annoys me so much, but every time I go click on the State House News Service link and I start seeing what the legislators did today, half the time they're putting days in a sick bank for somebody. Why do we allow this? What is with this anyway? This week alone, I think there were 8 people who have sick banks. It's like,
what kind of people? Legislators?
Half of them work for the DOC. What's up with that?
Department of Corrections
or the
Mental Health?
So that means if you need more sick time and you don't have
it,
somebody can donate it to you.
Yeah, I mean, what if the whole world worked like that?
That'd be great. That would be great. Then those young people who are supposed to be getting Obamacare could also be giving us their sick time. And we would be on vacation right now.
I don't know.
Don't they get vacations, the Department of Corrections?
And don't they have long-term health insurance? Don't they have everything else?
That's a good question. If they have long-term and short-term disability, why are we giving them so much sick time?
Don't know.
Could be a scandal. I think
here's my list for the week. This is kind of a grim list, but
it's okay.
Things seem to go in waves? The same is true of crime. So I was thinking about this. I started obsessing about it, if you want to know the truth.
You obsess about a lot of things, Emily.
And I'm not always thinking about this show when I'm doing it. I started going back and I said, oh, wait, I can make this a list. So in the 80s, carjacking was a big crime.
Oh, yes.
You know, but we don't hear about crime.
We don't.
You know what the big crime is right now?
What?
Huge. Hit and run.
Really?
All right. So I went back. I mean, this was a very simple Google search, and I narrowed my search to within actually the Boston area. I've got a list here this long. So these are people who, like, somebody hit a state trooper in Grafton this week. He was arresting somebody. They hit him and ran. There was a Pittsfield woman struck on the Mass Pike on November 8th. A Norfolk high school senior killed a woman in Canton and took off. And there was a kid in the car with him saying,
oh, he went back?
Said, you have to go back.
He went back.
This week in Framing, there's a two-car collision. One of the guys gets out of the car. They're about to exchange insurance things. One of them gets in the car and takes off. October 28th, a fatal hit and run. This idiot drops the license plate off of his car at the scene, not intentionally.
Yeah.
And that's how they chased him down. They got that guy. There was a woman in Everett who was at a bus stop who was hit by somebody. He took off. October 11th, a fatal hit and run in Middleboro. That was another gruesome one. And here's one that I'm really curious about. October 4th in Newton, a 65-year-old woman hits an 87-year-old man crossing the street, and they're refusing to release her name. What do you think is up with that? What do you mean
they're refusing to release her name?
It must
Newton?
Be some prominent Newton person.
She's wired.
Get on that.
I would say I'll get on that. Newton, I'll look into that right away.
But
that
anyway.
That is weird.
And I was starting wondering, the thing that started making me curious about this was the psychology of it. And then I went further on this, and there were actually whole law practices devoted to people who hit and run. Because there is the fear factor. Right? Emotionally, I can understand that. You've hit somebody, and whether you're drunk or not.
Well, that's what I always figure.
There are two things. There are two things. I mean, alcohol often comes into play. But I think just as often it's this fear factor that, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble now. And you think, if I can just get out of here. But it's...
You know what the cousin to this is? And this is one of those gruesome things that fascinate me, is you accidentally kill somebody and then you cut the body up. You know, totally.
What?
No, this
Who
is
are
what
you talking about?
No, I'm talking about you.
Cut
you do,
the
Google
body.
This. They need to get rid of the body rather than face the fact that this person died from asphyxiation or they died from a drug overdose. Yeah. It happened in Provincetown. It happened to that guy that was.
Yeah, but that would make you wonder how accidental it was.
No,
yeah.
But it's this. No, but it is. It
That's
turns
very
out to be
cheerful.
Accidental.
Cut the
I know.
Body
sorry,
up.
My. That was even more cheerful than mine.
I did not
anyway,
know.
Anyway, you're going to start noticing this.
Okay.
Hit and runs.
All right. Do you have anything else or is that
that's
it? That's it. Well, I tell you, because you get on top of this hit and run situation.
Yeah.
I think that's terrible.
I'm going to make my own list on the cutting bodies.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Emily, thanks for driving. All
right. Hold on. What's going on in Beat the Press? Oh, you're asking what's going on in Beat the Press?
What's going on in Beat the Press?
What's going on in Beat the Press tonight?
So we're doing a story about John Henry and whether he's going to hang on to the Worcester Telegram Gazette. He hasn't visited it the way he has the Boston Globe. He hasn't said a word about it. And some of the folks out there are getting kind of nervous. We're also going to do a little spot on drone journalism. How
what's
little
that?
Tiny drones can be used to news gather in a way that... And it's actually being experimented with.
I'm all for it.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
The drone goes to the fire?
Or Occupy, or it could go to the rolling rally for the Red Sox.
And talks?
Well, no.
Well,
but
just
it gets
collects
pictures.
Info.
And,
wow.
And
wow.
Infrared, you name it.
Emily,
we
really
could have found, it could have found Joe Karzarnaya for us.
On the cutting
edge.
Well,
that would have been a good idea. That would have been a very good idea.
Emily Rudy, Greater Boston, 7 o'clock on Channel 2. When we come back, it's time for our Friday news quiz. We have something for everyone. Animal lovers, health conscious folks. We have veterinarian Nick Trout and cardiologist Tom Lee joining us. This is 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
WGBH News presents a week of focus coverage. You're not alone, caring for our elderly parents. Join us this week on WGBH Radio, WGBH2's Greater Boston, and online at WGBHnews.org.
This week on Innovation Hub, how are our cities changing?
Most Wall Street is on the way to becoming a residential neighborhood.
I'm Kara Miller, the future of cities. Saturday morning at 10 here on 89.7 WGBH.
We love our contributors. That means you. And the 17th Annual Boston International Fine Art Show, 40 galleries, masterpieces by Renoir, Child Hassam, John Singer Sargent, and today's emerging artists, November 21st through the 24th. Details at fineartboston.com/WGBH. And It's Your Move, Inc. Oftentimes, adult children are not available to help parents with later life moves. It's Your Move specializes in these challenging emotional life transitions. More info available at itsyourmoveinc.com.
This is very exciting. We have our weekly news quiz this week. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio, I should say. Between two doctors, Tom Lee is a physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital and a professor at Harvard Medical School and the chief medical officer at Prescani. And he has a new book titled, we're going to ask you about this book, Eugene Braunwald and the Rise of Modern Medicine. Nick Trout over here. He is a veterinarian, a surgeon at Angel Memorial Hospital, and his latest book is The Patron Saint of Dogs. Welcome to you both. Thanks for being here. Now, Nick, let's start with you. You've been on here before in the news quiz. You've written a lot of books about dogs.
Yes.
You're like a novelist.
This last book is a novel, yeah. I've written a number of nonfiction books, but I finally decided to try my hand at fiction, so... A little different.
Is the dog the central character?
There are a number of dogs, but yes, one particular golden retriever is a central character.
And we knew that. I started reading it. I think I'm all the way to here from this morning, so I'm enjoying it. I'm on page 128. We knew that We knew that dog was going to be lasting around there, but it's great. And I always love it when it's well written. That really does help, you know, for books to be well written.
Thank you.
And Tom Lee, tell us about your book. I was embarrassed to say I've not heard of Eugene Braunwald, and he was obviously huge in terms terms of cardiac care. Tell people about him.
And he still is. And he is an icon of medicine right here in Boston. He's a national and international treasure, really. But, you know, he was born in 1929 in Vienna, chased out by the Nazis. And so this is a Jewish immigration story, this wave of immigrants that, you know, made America great and made American medicine great. But then the other part of the story is medicine in the second half of the 20th century going from being a very observational, passive art to being an aggressive, interventionalist science where we could change the future. And he was, as much as anyone, a driver of that. He showed that you could change the history with heart attacks by intervening early. He was the guy, really. And so it's an immigrant story. It's a history of medicine story. And it's still going on. He's 84 and doing great things still.
You know, you have a very funny chapter heading in the last chapter of your book, and we've been talking a lot about aging this week. As a matter of fact, we talked to you earlier in the week about statin drugs, and not that you necessarily have to be old for those, but the still years. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I saw him, and he was 80 at the time, and I said, so how are you doing? And he goes, well, I'm in the still years. And I said, do you know what that is? And I said, no. And he goes, it's when people come up to you and they go, oh, are you still working? Are you still doing research? Are you still traveling?
Are you still here?
And that's the unspoken message.
Oh, that was very, very, very clever. Okay, you guys ready to start our quiz? A lot of tension, I think.
Yes, a lot of tension.
Veterinary school versus the medical school. We're going to see who comes out on top. You want to start, Sue?
Yeah, I'm going to start. I'm going to take Nick. Nick, this is your first question. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here is Conan O'Brien, who in this clip is giving President Obama directives.
Former President is calling on President Obama to honor his promise to Americans to let them keep their current health policy. So, yeah, that's what he said. And then added, unless, of course, a younger, hotter insurance policy comes along.
All right. Who is giving that advice to President Obama?
That would be Bill Clinton.
That's right. The explainer in chief.
That's right. Okay. Very good. Okay. You ready, Dr. Lee?
I am.
Here is a CNN newscast from August. In this clip, a reporter is describing President Obama's vacation on Martha's Vineyard. Here it is.
President Obama played golf yesterday. He was back out on the green again today. And I expect that throughout the week, we will see him take a few trips to get ice cream with the first daughters and also possibly go to a bookstore. That's one of their sort of traditions when they're on Martha's Vineyard.
Okay, here's the question, Tom Lee. On future vacations on the vineyard, how else might President Obama spend his time and his money?
Ah, well, if the Wampanoags are really able to put up a casino, there's a chance that I may actually see him because I've never met him at the bookstore, but maybe I'll see him at the slot machine.
Yeah. I somehow think – we had Callie Crossy down here who spends a lot of time in the summer in Martha's Vineyard. I somehow don't think this is going to happen. I just
can't
see.
Of course it is.
I can't see the beautiful people down in Martha's Vineyard.
They're not all beautiful people, though. They're all people.
Yeah, but the beautiful people
I mean,
that come
beautiful
in the summer –
I mean, they're beautiful as people, but, you know.
– have lots of money. I think it may not. I mean,
all right, Nick, I have a
hold
question.
Hold on. What? I just want to ask you a quick question because we were reading – doing this thing on longevity this week. And we were talking about something called the longevity dividend, and for human beings, and supposedly it's not developed yet, but a pill basically that could help you live well into your older years. And they were talking about how little dogs live a long time, and older dogs generally don't live as long.
Right.
Now, why is that? That little dogs can go 15 years or so, and if you're...
Because they sleep in bed with you every
night,
that's why.
Like a Great Dane,
carried around
seven or 8 years. And
they don't use their skeleton as much. You know, I have no great answer for that.
This would be a question for your main character in the book. He's a pathologist. Yeah. Perhaps he could tell us, right?
I wish he were here. it's a well-known fact. And, I mean, I think the truth is that regardless of body size, all of our dogs are living longer. I mean, we're, you know, I've seen and done surgery on 17, 18-year-old dogs. And I was telling someone the other day that, you know, 21 was the new 15 in cats.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Really?
I mean, Nick, I'm just recently put down a dog, not recently, a couple of years. It's always recent for us, but it was 18 years old. It was a terrier chihuahua mix.
bit everybody in the face. It was just, you know, but as he got older, he was delightful. But I always tell folks at some point I just stopped taking him to the vet, you know, because he was just filled with bad news. He didn't seem to be in any pain. He couldn't see, couldn't hear. His teeth were falling out. He had a slip disc. But we had another dog as well, but he seemed perfectly happy. And once I stopped taking him to the vet, things were
fine.
That
was success.
Yeah.
Do you have a theory, Dr. Lee? I know you take care of human beings, but do you have a theory on why dogs littler live longer than older dogs?
Well, you know, I also think there's the hybrid dogs live longer because it's, you know, it's, you know, the diversity of the genetic pool. Like, I think a lot of these little dogs are blends and that makes them more vigorous and tougher.
Oh, good.
Yeah, vigorous and tougher.
I have a blend, so I'm all set. Okay.
All right. You ready, Nick? Here we go. Here's your question. A well-known political has a new book out just in time for the holiday season. Here she is reading from it.
We frequently play Eskimo Bingo, a gift-swapping game, and the only time we enthusiastically encourage the kids to be greedy. Everyone brings a wrapped gift for exchange and places it on the floor. With a timer ticking, we roll dice in a pie tin and hope to get double so the gift grabbing can begin. Each person gets to steal presents from the center of our circle, even ones already nabbed.
Who is the author of this book?
That would be Sarah Palin. With her new
Very
book
good.
On Christmas.
Former Alaska governor Sarah Palin. The book is called Good Times and Great Joy, Protecting the Heart of Christmas. I don't know how that game kind of goes to that point, but there you go.
I don't know if I'm going to be buying that
I think that's called
one.
The Yankee Swap, too, by the way.
I don't know.
Just FYI.
Okay. You ready, Dr. Lee?
I'm ready.
Rahm Emanuel, rather, is mad at the World Trade Center.
If it looks like an antenna, acts like an antenna, then guess what? It is an antenna. That's number one. Number two, I think that at the Willis Tower, you will have a view that's unprecedented in its beauty and its landscape and its capacity to capture something, something you can't do from an antenna.
Okay. Why is he talking about Chicago's Willis Tower, better known as the old Sears Tower?
Oh, this is the contest over what is the tallest building in the world. And the new World Trade Center has a structure on top that that makes it taller than the tallest building in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he's just being bitter because the White Sox and the Cubs never win anything. And he's a competitive guy and he can't take losing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I think about this. It almost seems like it is a little bit cheating just to have that structure. It's not really – no one's up there. There's no human beings up there, right?
I saw the argument for it being considered architectural and part of the building and part of the design of it, and I buy it. It's not just a pointy wire on top for radio. It is part of the design. So I vote with New York on this one.
Okay. You know, Doctor, tell us a little bit more. We mentioned before you've just written this new book titled Eugene Braunwald and the Rise of Modern Medicine. He made a big impact at what's now the Brigham and Women's Hospital, but it wasn't when he first came there. What was the big deal about his coming there?
Well, you know, he came in 72 and, you know, he's one of these guys who built modern medicine and he sort of created the triple threat. And, you know, one of the people who trained here was Rahm Emanuel's brother, Zeke Emanuel. And actually, that was one of the great things about Dr. Braunwald is that he has a broad idea of what it means to make your contribution. So Zeke is a cancer doctor and an ethicist. And the idea that you might actually make your contribution not just by laboratory science but improving the way we think about things, he was open to that. And so he helped build this incredibly strong powerhouse that we have here in Boston for academic medicine.
And Nick Trout, your book, The Patron Saint of Lost Dogs, this is your first fiction effort. You've certainly written about dogs in the past. This takes an interesting look at, a returning son, if you will, to his estranged dad's practice and sort of getting to know the folks in the town via the animals that they bring in for treatment.
Yeah, I mean, one of the quirks of this book is that the veterinarian at the center of it is actually trained as a veterinary pathologist, and he's got some social problems of his own in that when he goes to try and take over this practice, he has never worked with living animals, and he has avoided awkward social interactions with the pet-owning public because of being, stuck behind a microscope most of the time. And so this does create this great opportunity for some awkward, embarrassing, entertaining experiences as he tries to learn his way in the world of real veterinary medicine.
Is it hard for you, doctor, to ever talk to patients?
Oh, no, no. I mean, I have to say that I would imagine that Nick's talks to his patients as well, but my patients talk back more to me. But like actually, you know, listening to patients, it's a little bit of a lost art as science has progressed and medicine turns into people with narrow expertises and they're focused on doing something for a disease. But I actually think that people figured out that the pendulum has swung too far in that way, and actually trying to listen to patients is critical now. Things have reached a crisis point because of all the specialization, and listening is very much coming back in vogue.
That is the voice of Dr. Tom Lee, a physician at Brigham and Women's Hospital and a professor at Harvard Medical School. Also joining us today is veterinarian Nick Trout, and he's a surgeon at Angel Animal Medical Center in Boston. One more question, Dr. Lee, before we get back to the calls. Are people at the Brigham, are they rooting for Obama to pull this off with this mess rollout? I mean, are people hoping that this is going to be okay and good and resolved?
You know, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's one of the great things about Massachusetts is like, you know, we went into healthcare reform a little bit for the rest of the country and no doctor wants it to go back. You know, it's the right thing to do. There are bumps and hiccups. In the long run, this will be a bump in the road that people have forgotten about. And we'll have broadened coverage, and we'll be a better society for it.
I think we should have health care for our dogs.
Well, we do. We have the private insurance. You know, I'm always amazed.
I heard it was a ripoff.
Well, whoa, easy.
When I go into Angel, which I do, it's where my dog gets his treatment. We're still treating him because he's young. But you know, it's always amazing to me how quickly you get such great service and with the insurance. And I once said to a woman, I said, well, you have insurance for your dogs? She goes, yeah, I don't have it for my kids, but I have for my dogs.
Wait a minute. Now, so I'm wrong about that. I always heard that insurance was not worth it for dogs.
I think it does depend. It's interesting how in the UK, something like 30 to 50% of pet owners have insurance.
Oh, socialist again, Marjorie.
Yeah, there you go. You got to watch them. but only, I think it's somewhere around 3% in the US. But I would say that it is increasing in popularity slowly, and I never cease to be amazed by the number of pet owners who are thankful that they mm-hmm. went with it. And so I think, unfortunately, given the progress in what is available and what the pet owner public want to do with their animals and keep them in their lives, it's going to get costly, and insurance is a good way to defend against that.
You know, I joke about not taking my dog Sam to the vet, but at the same time, he cost me $8,000 in surgery. So for over his life, you know, he had bladder problems with bladder stones.
That was just a neuter surgery.
And then I said to the vet, "Is he going to live long?" And they said yes. And then a door got slammed on him. He had the same Kurt Schilling surgery, you know. And I'm like, yeah, so yes, I would have liked to have insurance on Sam, that's for sure. Okay, here's your question, Nick Trout. Back to the game. Here's newsman Bill Keller reporting on Mayor Menino.
From the moment he announced the end of his 20-year run in City Hall, Menino's next step has been a subject of much speculation, even by the man himself.
First, I could be making donuts at a donut shop.
But the donut world will have to wait.
Why will the donut world have to wait, Nick Trout?
Mayor Menino is going to take a position at BU.
Very good. He's going to start his job at the Urban Institute.
Boy, this is unbelievable. I don't think either of you has got a question wrong.
I know.
We should all be going
to
medical school. I get the questions wrong.
So you can do well at the quiz. Just go to medical school.
Here's one more question, Dr. Lee, before we move on to the very exciting bonus round. You ready? The Russian subway system is allowing passengers to ride for free, provided they do a simple task. Actually, 30 simple tasks. Listen to this report from the BBC.
As you can see, I'm trying to do in this rather unusual Russian vending machine. And I've told them if I can do 30 in 2 minutes, then this machine will actually reward me with a free metro ticket. 3, 2, 1. Oh. There we go. I've done it. I'm going to get my ticket. Here it comes.
Okay. I'm going to be shocked if you get this one. What are the passengers doing to get a free ride and why?
I have no idea. Maybe they can see Sarah Palin from Russia or something like that. But no idea.
No, that's a do you have any idea, Dr. Trout?
It sounded some sort of exertion there. I would say push-ups or something.
Well, you're close. You're close. They are doing 30 squats, and it's a promotion for the upcoming Winter Olympics in Russia. Okay. Should we move on? I guess we should move on to the bonus round. Just running out of time. Okay.
Right.
You want to start the bonus round there,
since
Sue O'Connell?
Tom Lee, you're a cardiologist, and Nick Trout, you're a vet, we're going to ask you about a book where these two things converge. I can't read mine. I'm sorry. Heart of a Dog. Heart of a Dog. Mikhail, so you give me the tough one.
Okay,
Mikhail
Bulgakov.
He was also a doctor. For a quick synopsis, The Heart of the Dog, which was translated from Russian to English, obviously, in 1968, it's a satire on the communist efforts to create a new Soviet man. It's told from the point of view from Shirik, a stray mongrel who was taken in by a scientist who does medical experiments on him, turning him into a man. Okay, Marjorie, go with the question.
Okay, this is a multiple choice question, okay?
Who are you asking?
I'm asking Nick, I think, right?
Okay.
Okay, isn't that what we started with?
Yep.
Okay, Nick, here's the multiple choice. What is the first line of Heat of a Dog? A, oh, look at me, I'm perishing in the gateway. B, confounded blizzard, not even my matted coat can spare me from the elements. Or C, what I would do for a sausage.
I'm thinking about my Labrador, so I'd go with C.
No, that's a great guess. In fact, I'm supposed to let Dr. Lee want to take a guess here.
Yeah, take a guess.
No, I would guess, given the climate, B.
B, both of you missed out. It is A, look at me, I'm perishing in the gateway.
Okay, Dr. Lee, here you go. In Heart of a Dog, after Shirik is domesticated and is walking the streets of Moscow with his owner, how do stray dogs taunt him? A, by calling him Six Legs. B, by calling him bourgeois scum, or C, by calling him the cat?
Oh.
Which do you think is more insulting?
I think that probably B, the bourgeois scum, still
has
a
I'm sorry.
Stain.
Nope.
Nick Trout?
I'm going to go for A.
A it is, calling him Six Legs.
Okay, this is the last question. Now, we had to get a score from the judges. What is the score, please, at this point in the game? Do we know? We're still adding it up, so we don't know.
I think Angel Memorial is winning and Brigham Women's is trailing by one.
Okay, we'll go with that.
You are correct.
You got a half point for your Sarah Palin comment.
That's right.
About
okay.
Alaska.
So, are we a half point difference here?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so Dr. Lee, this is the last question to you. If you win it, you get the whole enchilada. If not, you have to go home to Brigham and Women's being beaten out by a vet. I don't know if they're going to be able to take that. When Shirik gets a first glimpse of himself in a mirror, what does he say to himself? A, it's very possible that my grandmother sinned with a Newfoundland. B, could I be a descendant of canine loyalty? Or C, now that is a tale to be proud of.
I would go with C.
That is incorrect.
All right, Nick.
Veterinarian Nick, who I should point out, well, you know better than I do that it's harder to get into vet school than it is to medical school, so I insulted you unfairly, didn't I? Okay, do you know, Nick, that's a vet?
I would go with B.
You're both wrong. The answer is A, it is very possible that my grandmother sinned with a Newfoundland. Okay.
We have
a couple of minutes left, you guys, but I just want to give you a chance to promote your wonderful book and anything else you'd like to promote here. Nick Trout from the Angel Memorial Hospital. Your latest book is The Patron Saint of Dogs. You want to tell us about some other books? You want to tell us something going on with Angel?
I would just tell you that the sequel to Patron Saints is coming out April 4th next year, and it's going to carry on right where this one left off.
And you've written non-fiction books. Is this about
dog care, animal care? My first book was Tell Me Where It Hurts, which was really all about a crazy 24-hour period at Angel. It was a lot of various animal stories, and that was a fairly popular book.
I have to say, I brought my daughter's hamster in for a visit. That's a whole nother story, but and we ended up having to put Pookie down, and the care that the staff gave to my daughter, who was 5 at the time.
That's great.
Around this hamster was just an amazing, amazing
thing. Angel Memorial is great.
It's great.
It's a great hospital. Now, and Dr. Lee, is this your first book?
No, I've written some other books, and
you
have? Health policy books and so on. But like, this is my first biography/history type book, and it was a real pleasure, very rewarding to plunge into someone's life and draw lessons from it.
Are you amazed that people don't know as much about him as?
Well, within he hasn't been a self-promoter, but within medicine, everyone knows who he is. He's an icon, and he's clearly the most influential researcher cardiologist of our time.
Yeah, for those of us old enough to remember, there were people who had heart ailments and sat on the porch with a blanket and the rocking chair until they faded away, and those same ailments now are just treatable and preventable.
Well, if you remember Roger Sterling's heart attack in Mad Men season one, put him in a bed. There were no monitors.
that was
accurate. But coronary care units came along a year or two later, 62, and medicine is radically different now. We attack the heart attacks and rather than just hope for the best. And Eugene Bramwell was a huge part of that change.
And Eugene Bramwell, this is an incredible, horrifying fact that they put a limit on the number of Jewish medical students when he went to NYU, and he just barely made the cut.
And finished first?
Virtually every medical school in the country had Jewish quotas.
It's just devastating to read that. Anyway, thank you both for joining us today. That was our weekly news quiz. We had Drs. Tom Lee and Drs. Nick Trout. Tom Lee is a physician at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and a professor at Harvard Law School and the chief medical officer at Press Ganey. And his new book is titled Eugene Brunwall and the Rise of Modern Medicine. Nick Trout is a surgeon at Angel Animal Medical Center in Boston. His latest book is The Patron Saint of Dogs. I am Marjorie Egan. She is Sue O'Connell. Thank you both for listening to us. Jim Brown will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. Please tune in again.